Good to be back in Shear. And this week is Parshat Noach. So we're going to actually pull out a golden oldie from the catalog. I want to put this into the scope, though, of a larger question. And the larger question is, what are we to make of these two parashot? And I say these two because I think it's almost never that we meet the week of Parshat Bereishit. Because sometimes the week of Parshat Bereishit doesn't exist, like last year. Or if it does exist, you know, Wednesday is recovery day from traveling and all that stuff. So we rarely meet in Parshat. So I'm going to ask really a Bereishit Noach question. Because when it comes to Mincha this Shabbat, we're already going to meet Avraham. Actually, at the end of Shvi, the Shabbat, we're going to meet Avraham, and then we're off and running. So what's Bereishit Noach all about? And it carries with it so many bizarre stories with people, an amazing length of, you know, their lifetime, talking snakes, forbidden trees, just so many weird things. And another piece of that question is, like, what does it say to me? In other words, to take a page from Rashi's opening comment, Rashi famously asks, why does the Torah have to start with Bereishit if you should start with the first mitzvah, Choros Elohim? And then Rashi gives the explanation he does, and everybody jumps in on Rashi's throat about it. But I'm going to modify the question a little bit and say, why do I need to hear the stories of Bereishit Noach? And there's several, I think, very solid answers, but there's one perspective I'd like to put on it that I think will change the way we look at those stories, and maybe change the way we look at maybe the rest of Bereishit and really maybe the rest of Jewish history. So nothing like a little grandiose opening. Who is the first character in history? The first real character.
The snake.
First real character. I think it's fairly safe to say Abraham. To call Adam or Noach, and certainly any of the secondary and tertiary characters and ancillary, you know, walk-ons, characters is not really unfair. Like, Lamech isn't somebody that I connect with at all, even as an enemy. And Adam is a stick figure. Noach's a stick figure. There's no development of persona in the text where I can identify with him. Avraham is somebody that I walk with. Avraham is somebody that I'm concerned. I feel his pain when he feels that he has to send Ishmael away, but doesn't want to. I feel the struggle as he goes up to the Akedah. Avraham is somebody I connect with. And from that moment on, there's always somebody I connect with. I connect with Yitzchak. I connect with Yaakov. I may even connect with Esav. I may even connect with Ishmael. I certainly connect with the brothers and Yosef. And I'm fully, fully invested with Moshe and his family and the etc. So the real first character is Avraham. And if you think about it, the Torah is teaching us how we're supposed to live our lives. And how we're supposed to live our lives is started by Avraham. And we're supposed to use Avraham as a model. We don't use Adam and Noach as models, unless, you know, you want to build a boat. But, you know, they're not models for us. So I'd like to suggest that instead of looking at the text in a linear fashion, look at the first 11 chapters, or the first two parshas, if you want to call them, as prologue. That really, the first character... What?
You could back this up with Bihi Baram.
Yeah, okay. The Bihi Baram, Avraham, is that the real first character is Avraham, and Avraham is the kolboinik. A kolboinik is a guy that you call in to do odd jobs and fix everything. So what happened? HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates the world. The world goes to hell in a handbasket. HaKadosh Baruch Hu destroys the world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu recreates the world. And he makes an oath, he'll never destroy the world again. But the world doesn't live up its part, goes to hell in a handbasket. So this time Hashem says, I can't destroy the world, I got to create NCSY and make Avraham regional director. And so instead of destruction, it's going to be education. He's the guy. So if you call a guy to your house and say, fix it, the first thing he's going to say is, what's broke? What do you want me to fix? So the first 11 chapters are telling us kind of what's broke. And it's an interesting pattern. If you look at it, what's the first thing that goes wrong in Bereishit? First thing that goes sour, goes bad.
You mean with Avraham or before Avraham?
No, in the first vlog, in the prologue. What's the first problem? What's the first bad thing?
The apple?
It's not an apple, but whatever that tree is, right? Now, what's that tree about? It's clearly, it's about appetite. It's about appetite. There's lust involved. And if you think about it, there's a lot of sexuality involved. They're naked. They suddenly realize they're naked. Right? And people have picked up on this ever since, midrashically and in all sorts of comments about the sexuality of that scene. The matter of Chazal even suggests that the tree was a grapevine, because the grapevine's always associated with illicit sexuality. Hence, Sota, Nazir connection. Right? What's the next terrible crime that happens after that? Cain and Hevel. Now, Cain and Hevel, you could argue, is a crime of passion or maybe even a mistake, because maybe Cain doesn't know what he's doing. But by the time you get to Lamech, who is Cain's descendant, violence has turned into a strategy. And Cain seems to be threatening Lamech seems to be threatening his wives, and says, if you don't do what I want, I'll kill you. Right? And then what's the final blow that kind of moves things towards destruction? Is a pasuk at the end of the whole Lamech story, which talks about a fellow named Enosh, who is Adam's grandson. And it says, Az hu chal likro b'shem Adonai. That's when people started calling out in God's name. And the Rishonim were all over the place trying to explain what that means. The Rambam takes it to mean people started calling other things God. In other words, that this is the beginning of Avodah Zarah. And if you think about the continuum of those three things, they actually make a lot of sense. The first thing is people have appetites. And if they don't have the moral curbs to stop their appetites, they'll take whatever they want. And when they want to take whatever they want, but sometimes somebody wants to stop them, like the proprietor, or the husband of, or the father of, right? And so if the person with the appetite is strong enough, then they simply overpower them and maybe kill them. You've got what I want. But an interesting reality about humans is humans don't like to live with inner conflict. You don't like to walk around thinking, oh, I'm a killer, I'm a bad guy, and I'm somebody who can't curb his appetite, and therefore, in order to get what I wanted, I killed somebody else. So what do? We develop an ideology to make it work, where suddenly I'm from the superior race and you're from the mud people, therefore everything belongs to me. I'm cleansing the world of all of the evil, you know, destroys it, you know, and we've seen it in our own, in the 20th century, an ideology developed to justify mass killing. And it's not by coincidence, I think, that those three crimes are the three crimes that we see as cardinal sins that one must martyr themselves rather than violate, which is Yilorayot, Shehudamim, and Avodah Zarah. Okay, so that's it. That's the end of it. God destroys the world. Okay, we start again. Start again, and again, the world goes to hell in a handbasket. What's the first thing that happens wrong? The first thing that happens wrong is the parsha we're going to study right here in about 2 minutes, which is Noach, some wine, a tent. We'll see what happens there. The next thing that happens isn't a crime unless you look very carefully at the text. The way that God creates the world, man is positioned as something between God's agent and the supplicant. Either the one who's supposed to run the world or supposed to sort of be pleading on behalf of the world to God to make things work or however. But we meet the first person who is called a king in the world, in the person of Nimrod. Nimrod's the first person to be called a king. And what else do we know about Nimrod? We know that Nimrod is a mighty archer. So you put the two and two together, and what do you get? How does Nimrod become a king? How does he get other people to be subjugated to him?
Toughest guy.
He's the toughest guy. He threatens them with violence, which means we're now back to appetite, our story, violence. And how does that whole story end up? The tower. What's the tower about? So Chazal say, and most were shown by this midrash, that the tower was about Avodah Zarah, building a big tower and kind of face off against God. So essentially, we've got the same pattern happening. And at that point, time for some help, and that's Avraham, and the story starts. And Avraham, if you think about it, is a great battler against those three things, against wanton violence, the story of the kings, against Gilui Arayot, the way that he and Sarah and all of those interactions, and, of course, Avodah Zarah. He's the one who declares one God. So there's a lot of that going on. But I want to focus in on this particular story, which is, shall we say, series two of sins, second cycle, and that's the beginning, which is this story here. Now, this story is a very weird story. You'd say it's a weird story is an understatement, but then again, it's part of the first 11 chapters, so they're all strange. But let's take a look at it. Vayivrei Noach, it's here on page 1 and in the English underneath. Vayivrei Noach Yitzimin Ateva Shem Chamba Yafet. All right, and that, by the way, is a totally reasonable statement to make, that the flood is over, everybody's left, and we know that there's only 8 people. A man, his 3 sons, and each one of those men's wives. That's it. Vayivrei Noach Yitzimin Ateva Shem V'cham V'yafet. And then we get a surprise. V'cham Hu Avi Chanan. Who's Cham? The father of Canaan. Which, by the way, is weird because we typically don't introduce people as father of. We typically introduce people as a son of. So if we were to tell a story about Canaan, we'd say Canaan ben Cham. By the way, he's never called ben Cham. But Cham Avi Canaan. So you got to wonder why. So you might argue that at the time of the flood, there was one grandchild. In other words, Noach has 3 sons, and Ham already has a grandchild, has a son, so Canaan. It's not going to work, because we're going to find out later that Canaan is the youngest of Ham's kids, and the rest of them didn't die of SIDS. I mean, they're all alive. So that won't work. So we've got to figure out, why is he mentioned here? All right. And our assumption is going to be that there's some sort of foreshadowing. There'll be some story involving Ham, and his fact that he's Canaan's son is important for the story. Sorry, Canaan, the fact that he's Ham's son is going to be important, so we have to pay attention. Okay. And that's critical because the whole world is Bnei Noach. I'm Ben Noach, you're Ben Noach, we're all Bnei Noach, because Noach is the only guy to survive, he and his kids, so we're all children of Noach. Okay. Vayachal Noach ish ha'adama vayita karim. So what's the first thing that Noach does after everything's settled down? He plants a vineyard, which we're not going to start going into, like, what vegetation did he save and what vegetation was spared and everything else. I don't know how it works. We can guess whatever you want. He plants a vineyard. Now, vayesh min hayayin vayishkar. He drinks from the wine, he gets drunk. When does that happen? Meaning, how much time is elapsing in these psukim? So between Pasuk 1 and 2, nothing. I mean, it's just a recall. Between 2 and 3, it could be right away. It could be the first thing he does is to plant a vineyard. What about between planting a vineyard and getting drunk? How much time passed?
Enough for the grapes to grow.
Which means? Several years, because you have to have the grapes grow. We're assuming he knows how to do this, but the grapes grow, then you got to turn them into wine, then you got to ferment. You got to sit there for a while until the wine becomes wine that's reasonable, and he drinks from it. So that means that this story that we're reading is not a story that happens in 1 minute. It's a story that happens over the course of time. Okay.
You didn't translate the first four words of Kaf.
Of Kaf. Vayachel Noach. So Vayachel, the typical translation, I think how they have began from Lahatchil. Midrashically, they love to play the word chulin, that Noach became like mundane or somewhat profaned by doing that, and that Noach should have been involved in more ethereal things, and instead he becomes a farmer. All right, and that takes us back to the whole Kain Hevel problem. Is a farmer better, a rancher better? And it goes back to the whole Mitzri Ivri conflict. But the simple read of it is that that's the first thing he did. And there's nothing wrong with that. He plants vineyard. He drinks. Now, we don't really like people who are drunk. We were talking about this earlier in the context of Simchat Torah. And who gets drunk in Tanakh? Noach gets drunk. We see that. Who else gets drunk in Tanakh?
Achashverosh.
So Achashverosh never gets drunk in Tanakh. Gets drunk in the Midrashim like crazy. Doesn't get drunk in Tanakh. Who gets drunk in Tanakh?
Lot
seems to. We don't actually have the word Vayishkar, but it seems that he gets drunk. Right, his daughters get him drunk. It seems like it. Surprisingly, Yosef and his brothers get drunk. Right? Vayishtu vayishkaru imo, at that meal when he's still playing the possum. And otherwise, there's only 2 other people who get drunk. There's Naval who gets drunk, super drunk, the whole story with Abigail, and then there's the king sitting in the Goren in the story of the war of Aram versus Achav. And that's pretty much it. Right? We don't have a lot of shikrut in Tanakh. But the first shikr is Noach. Okay? So, but it's something we certainly see negatively. Vayitgal betocho holo. What happens to him? Vayitgal seems to mean he becomes revealed in his tent. And the sense is that he's naked, like his clothes have fallen off him, in his tent. Now look at the way oholo is spelled. How should it be spelled? with a vav at the end. Instead, it's spelled with a hey at the end. There may be something going on there, but that's not unheard of in Tanakh. Okay. And now, that's the setting. Vayar Cham Avi Chanan. Again, Cham is called Avi Chanan. So Cham is the center here. Chanan doesn't do anything in this story. But Vayar Cham Avi Chanan Eter Vat Aviv. What does Cham do? What? He sees his father's nakedness. That's what it says. Sees his father's nakedness. Now, is there something at this point we don't like? I don't think we like Noach being drunk. We don't like Noach being drunk and naked. But is there anything we don't like on Ham's part?
Yeah.
What?
It's inappropriate.
What's inappropriate?
Being with his father in that situation.
So he walked in. He saw his father was naked. The first thing he does is walk out. Right? So we don't know how long he stayed. We don't know if he said something. But we do know that he walks out and says, Vayageh l'shnechav b'chutz. He walks out and tells Shem and Yefet. And what does he tell them? Seems like he says, hey, dad's drunk and naked. And maybe even he says, ha, 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 dad's drunk and naked. Ha, 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 maybe. Okay? Now, where are we going to put this in a class of crimes?
Not a big deal.
Right. Meaning, we don't like it. We certainly wouldn't want this guy to be our father-in-law. But it's kind of hard to get really upset about it. Matt. Vayikach Shem v'Yefet l'asimla, v'yasimu ashchem shneihem. So Shem and Yefet take a garment, they put it on their shoulders.
Why is it called hasimla?
What?
Is there any significance to the fact that it's like the cloak?
It may be the cloak of Noah. V'yalchu achoranit. What do? They walk in backwards. Why do they walk in backwards? So they won't see it. V'yichasu et tevat aviyem. They cover up their father's nakedness. Now, by the way, if they walk in backwards, how do they know how to cover up their father's nakedness? We got a problem here, which is you can't see. We went up to Har Bayit on the first day of Chol HaMoed, and even though it's not absolutely required, the common protocol is that when you're on Har Bayit, you never turn your back to the place of the Mikdash. And so for part of our walk, we were all walking backwards. I have to tell you, it's not easy to walk backwards, especially somewhere that you're not really familiar with, and there's stones and rocks and stuff. You have to be warning each other, watch, there's a stone behind. It's not so easy. But they walk in backwards. Somehow, they're peeking, I guess, to see, you know, make sure they cover it right. And there's a real emphasis in the Pasuk about the fact that they're looking backwards. Okay, so Noach wakes up. Every drunk has their day after, right? Famous thing in the Rav about that, about Naval and waking up from his hangover, from his being drunk. Vayeda et asher asah lo b'no hakatan. What happened? Noach wakes up and he knew what his son had done to him. What's there to know? I mean, think about it. You, this happens always, you know, we're sitting at the table reading and we fall asleep, you know, lying on the couch reading a book and fall asleep. And one of our kids or parents or whoever it is walks in and, you know, makes a comment or walks in and smiles and says, oh, isn't my Abba cute or whatever. How do you know? What's to know? There's nothing to know. And then it gets even worse. Vayomer Arur Kanan. What does he do? He curses Kanan. And the truth is, that's two weird things. The first weird thing is, he's cursing somebody. Why is he cursing somebody? Because whatever was done was so heinous. What was done? I don't know. I was lying there naked, and now suddenly, I don't know. So it's a little weird. And second thing is, who's he cursing? Kanan. Why Kanan? He didn't do anything. And watch what he says. And this is where that famous... When I was a kid, I used to listen to Dr. Demento. Dr. Demento, at some point, got a hold of some record by some Southern trio, a duo, called I'm My Own Grandpa. Really cute. And it's based on a little ditty that Mark Twain wrote about how a person could become their own grandfather. Not really, but... So they made a whole song about it. The guy falls in love with an elderly widow, and that widow, in the meantime, has a daughter who marries his father, and it's a cute little thing. And about three cycles ago, some guy who was teaching Daf Yomi found a YouTube video, no, two cycles ago, a YouTube video of it, and they were doing Yavamot, and he sent it out to everybody. It suddenly became the most popular thing in the whole Daf Yomi world, because it fits like the third parak of Yavamot with all the weird relationships. It was really cute. So Here, though, you have a piece of this. Watch this. Arur Canaan, he curses Canaan. Eved Avadim Yel Achav. What's going to happen to Canaan? He'll be a super slave, I mean, a really enslaved to whom? Who are his brothers? Who are Canaan's brothers? Ham's other kids. No, because Canaan's brothers, Ham's other kids, which are Canaan and Put Mitzrayim. Put Mitzrayim and Lud, I think, right? Right? So, and then he says, he blesses Hashem, who is the God of shame, and Canaan will become his slave. So wait a second, who's Canaan working for? Is Canaan working for his uncle or for his brothers? Yaft Elohim li Yafet, that's the plan of the word Yafet, to spread out. God should spread Yafet out. V'yishkon bo alei shem v'yichnan eved lamo. And Canaan will be his slave too. So who's Canaan a slave to? His two uncles, to his brothers. Who's he slave to? Can't have that many owners. And so then the story ends up. V'yichino achachar mabo shalosh meot shana v'chashim shana, another 350 years. He dies at 950. Very nice. Okay, that's the last story. We hear about him drunk, disorderly. I think it kind of makes Noach into not a very positive character. I think that the last story Tanakh tells about you is telling, and that's why I'm not a big Noach fan, and I did not name any of my daughters Noach. Anyhow, or sons. However, this is the story. What happened? So Chazal are sensitive to this. Turn the page. And right away you can see in source one, Chazal are sensitive because they're bothered. They're bothered by two things that are one. One thing is, how could Noach know anything if all that happened was that Ham looked at him? And the second thing is, why is Noach going off the deep end here, cursing his own kids? Cursing, by the way, a third of humanity, maybe. It must have been something terrible. So they say it must be, let's put one and one together and you get three. It must be that whatever Ham did to him was something that was terrible and deserving of a curse, and something that left its imprint on Noach so that when Noach woke up, he would know about it. So what do they say? Rabu Shmuel, Chanamar Serso, Chanamar Rivao. We don't know who said what, Rabu Shmuel, but one of them said he castrated Noach. And the other one said he raped Noach. Now, what would be the reason for either of these things? So castration, I kind of get. Why?
No more kids.
And why is that invaluable? Because right now I own 1/3 of the world. I don't want to go down to 1/4 of the world or 1/5 of the world. And Rashi picks up on that and says, you castrated me so I could not have a fourth son to serve me in my old age. Therefore, I'm cursing your fourth son, Canaan. Now that, by the way, assumes that right after they left the Teva, Ham's already got all four kids. Maybe. Why would he rape him? So the old rape is not about sex, rape is about power, is actually very telling here. In Tanakh, we find several instances, the most notable and obvious one is Avshalom, where an individual, in order to demonstrate that they have taken power, takes the, if you will, sexual partner of the king and takes them for himself. So Avshalom with the 10 concubines in Yerushalayim, right, to show that he's taken over for David. That seems to be what the story of Reuven and Bilhah is about. Saying, Yaakov's old, Yaakov, I'm taking over. I'm taking over by taking his wife. Not my own mom. Not even my own mom's handmaiden, the other handmaiden, I'm going to take her. Now, whether he sleeps with her or moves the bed, it's all the same. It means I'm controlling the sexual politics. So that might be what is there.
Well, why would it be him versus his wife?
What do you mean?
Why would it be Noah versus Noah's wife?
Oh, good. So because Vayar Cham Avi Chanan Eit Ervat Aviv. That's the way we're reading it. Now, Noah also wakes up and he's upset because something's happened to him. However, what Jason's pointing us to is the curious spelling of Ohalo that we saw. Ohalo, the way it's spelled, seems to actually mean her tent. And the Midrash says it. Take a look at source 2. Betoch Ohalo, Ohalo k'tiv, betoch Ohala shel ishto. Meaning, what was Noach doing in there? Why was Noach in his wife's tent? And why was he naked? He was trying to have relations with her, but he's drunk. Okay, now, that takes us to the following place, but I'm going to start with doing one quick preface. This whole thing will come together in about 4 minutes. When was Bereishit written? It's vital, because we often err here. When was Bereishit written?
Moses.
By Moshe, not by Avram. Meaning that the terminology used in Bereishit is the same terminology as used in Vayikra. It's not like there's some different language in Bereishit. It's the same terminology as Vayikra. Same stenographer, same person writing it down. And now, in Vayikra, what does Lirot Erva mean? So please take a look at source 3. Source 3, which is from Vayikra, which talks about the whole list of Arayot. You might remember from Yom Kippur. Okay? And it lists all the Arayot. And in Pasuk Zion, it says, Ervat Avicha, Ervat Imcha Lo Tegale. You may not uncover the nakedness, which is a way of saying having relations, with whom? The nakedness of your father, the nakedness of your mother. Who's that? Imchahi, that's your mother. In other words, what's the nakedness of your father? Your mother. The prohibition here is against having relations with your father's wife, because your father's wife is your father's nakedness. Right? And you see it here also in Pasuk Ched, Ervat Esh Navicha Lo Tagalei. Let's say your father marries somebody else, not your mom. That's Ervat Avicha. So now take that and roll back to our Pasuk. Cham does what? He walks into where?
Tent.
He walks into his mom's tent. Who's there? His mom. Who else is there? His father. What's his father's state? Drunk and out of it. So what does Cham do? Take a look at the Pasuk. Vayar Cham Avi Chanan Eit Ervat Aviv. Simply translated, it means Cham has sex with his mom. Why would Cham have sex with his mom? Look at father, look at him. He's old, he's finished, he's washed up, he's done, I'm taking over. So what does he do? He walks out, and what's the first thing he does? He tells his brothers. What is he telling his brothers? I'm in charge. When they walk in, where are they walking into? Their mom's tent. What does their mom look like right now? Naked and probably pretty battered and probably pretty shell-shocked. And so what do? They cover her up. Chuta simla. Okay? Now remember, we saw in here that this parsha is not happening in 1 minute. It's taking us several years. Noach wakes up, and at some point he knows what his son has done to him. How does he know it? His wife's pregnant. His wife's pregnant. And what does he know? Well, it ain't me. And he evidently knows Shem and Yefet well enough to know it's Ham. So what does he do? He curses whom? The baby. Who's the baby? Canaan. The first moms are in history that we know of. He curses Canaan, and what does he say about Canaan? Canaan will be a slave to whom? His brothers. Who are Canaan's brothers? His uncles. His brothers are Shem and Yefet, because they share the mother. And so he says, Eved Avadim Yalachav, he'll be a slave to his brothers. And then he says, that Shem, he'll be your slave. Yefet, he'll be your slave. And suddenly, this whole thing now makes sense. It falls into place. We understand how Noah could know what happened. We understand why Noah is so outraged that he presents this. We understand why Cham is called Cham Avi Canaan. Because the whole story is really about the destiny of Canaan, who now are branded as Mamzerim, which, by the way, is critical for a nation that's about to walk into Eretz Canaan and dispossess them to know. And so now it all falls into place. So a footnote to this whole thing is that this is not mine. I stumbled upon this. There's an article that I footnoted that two fellows, I don't know who they are, wrote a bunch of years ago, publicized, I think, in JBL. And I stumbled on it because I went to a shiur of a friend of mine on this story. And he gave a whole different mahalach, but he had a footnote of this. He said, somebody wrote this, and I don't agree with it, so I'm going to give a different shir, but here it is. I looked it up. I did agree with it. I liked it. I loved it. And most places where I've taught it and shared it, people said, well, that's really cool. I had some places say, but it wasn't said by, you know, one of us. Like, you know, people are uncomfortable with it. So interestingly enough, after I gave once, I think in Brooklyn, somebody sent me an email with a copy of Torah Elohim, a commentary by a 19th century Chacham in Germany, Rav Heidenheim, which says the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. He says, what's Lerot Derva? Lerot Derva Taviv means to take a man's, the father's wife, and have relations with her, and the whole thing is falls into place. And so it gives us perhaps a new way of looking at it, but also an important piece is to say, we sometimes need to be able to open up the, at least the windows of the tent, if not open up the doors of the tent a little bit wider, and think beyond the box to see maybe what's going on in, you know, in the text. Last little footnote to this is, a number of years ago at school, I was teaching this during Parshat Noach. You know, I would give a Parsha Shir, so I'd start by going over the whole Parsha, and then you know, introduce them to one of the Parshanim, and taking one interestingly picante point. So I presented this. So that Friday morning, after I presented it, I walked into the teacher's lounge for a minute before going to the to davening, and I said to one of my colleagues, what would you think about it? And I suggested this. And his reaction was, who said it?
Of course.
So I said, I said it. He said, no, who said it that you said it? I said, does it matter? He said, yeah, you can't say it unless somebody said it. And the truth is that the conversation was that comical. But I realized that there are many people who are very uncomfortable with the idea of saying, we've got this new idea that was not said by somebody with all sorts of letters after their name and moss on the gravestone. But you know what? If it works, it works.
So why can I become...